A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
In an era of online retail where everything is just a few clicks away, buying a car should be no different. That's why at Carvana, you can buy a car 100% online. We made it easy to browse, view, and buy from over 10,000 cars. You can even trade in your old car, all while binge-watching your favorite TV show. Afterwards, we'll deliver your car to you. Or you can pick it up from one of our car vending machines. Either way, your car comes with a 7-day return policy. So grab a seat, relax in your comfy pants, and enjoy the new way to buy a car at Carvana.
NAPA know-how.
Get all the quality parts you need at your locally owned NAPA. Because right now, when you order from NAPA online, you can pick up curbside at your local store in just 30 minutes. Or get your order delivered direct to your door with free one-day shipping and over 160,000 quality parts when you spend $35 or more. Quality parts delivered quickly and safely. That's NAPA know-how.
NAPA know-how.
At participating stores, standard ground shipping and exclusions apply.
I would always be like, Eliza, around her. I think it was so annoying. But,
Look who I have with me today. It's Geraldine Viswanathan. How are
Hi.
You? What's up?
Not much. Good to see you.
I am happy to see you again, because even though I had a lovely time talking to you and Dacre for Broken Hearts Gallery, mm-hmm. 8 minutes is not enough. For one movie, let alone everything else that you're in that I love, that I wanted to ask you about. So I'm glad to have you here.
Let's do it. Me too.
So Ladies Night starts back at the very, very beginning. So I am curious, when you wanted to get into entertainment, did you know you wanted to be an actor, or was the beginning for you wanting to be a comedian?
I do think that I always wanted to ultimately be an actor. And I think at some point I felt like comedy, like doing stand-up and that comedy might be a nice, like it might be complementary to that it would be good practice and that it would kind of be a good exercise and potentially a sort of gateway into acting in film and TV, which ended up being kind of what happened. So that's cool.
You nailed it. In that case, backtracking a little, was there any particular movie, show, performance, you name it, that made it click for you when you saw that and you said, like, it's being an actor or nothing else?
I was, like, very afraid of movies as a child until I was, like, truly every movie. My dad told me that the first movie I saw, we had to leave because one of the Muppets lost their blanket and I started crying so much and I just had to leave the theater. And that's happened a few times. It happened in Harry Potter. That happened in Dinosaurs. I got scared of the dinosaurs. So I feel like it took me a while. The first thing I got really into was Friends. because that was such a like comforting, and I really liked the community, and I think I was a lonely kid, so I was like, wow, friends in New York just living together, that's the dream. So I think that was kind of my biggest influence early on, because it was also kind of my introduction to comedy, really. I thought it was so funny, and I think I've watched it so many times that sometimes I feel like I'm kind of doing the Friends rhythm.
I feel like if they ever do a reboot of Friends, which seems very likely to me, you got to get in on that.
Wow, that's crazy to think about. I mean, I have mixed feelings on that, but that's pretty cool.
I can understand why. Everyone's precious about their favorite things.
Right.
You have an opportunity like that. So wait, afraid of movies when you were super, super young. Yeah. Now, has any of that kind of lingered at all? Do you like horror movies?
I don't. I'm still a little baby. And I'm such a wimp. But it's weird because, like, a lot of my favorite films are horror films. I feel like, I mean, horror, but, like, the genre now is so interesting. I mean, I'm obsessed with Get Out. I've watched that so many times. So it's strange, but I don't like scary stuff. So
I'm just curious now, what's the scariest movie you've ever seen?
Oh my God. Hereditary was pretty scary.
Oh no, that's a fair one to pick. Okay. Going back to your comedy, because like, I'm not a funny person at all, so I can't wrap my brain around this whatsoever. How do you know that, like, you're not just funny, but, like, you're so funny that you actually could make it a career? Is there a point where it just kind of, like, clicks for you and you could really feel it working on that level?
Oh, my God. That's very nice. Do you mean, like, on set or, like, before, like, when I was getting into it?
On set, with friends, on stage, anywhere.
I don't know. I think, like, deep down, I think I'm a very serious person. I think I'm pretty sincere, but, like when I was a kid, I hated when people laughed at me. I would, like, get upset because I was, like, was so sincere. But I think it got to a point where I was, like, you actually have to have a sense of humor to survive. And then I just went, like, deep into that. And then it became sort of my life. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I would describe myself as like a very funny person, but I love comedy and watching comedy and performing comedy. I don't know if something like kicks in when I know that I'm performing. I don't know.
I will say with everything that I've seen you in, like your intonation and your timing, it always just wows me. I can't process how that works. So, wow. Jumping onto your very, very first film set, what would you say is the thing that made you go, like, whoa, I can't believe that's the way this stuff works on a film set?
Mm-hmm. I feel like my first big thing was, my first, like, proper movie was Blockers. And I feel like most of the times it's, like, the kids and the parents were separate, but there was one day where we were shooting together, and I think watching Ike Barinholtz and Leslie Mann and John Cena improvising together so much, and how effective that was, and how funny it was, and how it gave Kay and the editor so many options. I feel like that's something that clicked for me, where I was like, oh yeah, you should be playing as much as you possibly can, because I was so like, I got to set and I was like, no more lines. I was almost like a student about it. Cause I guess coming from like high school and university or something, but yeah, it was really kind of inspiring to see them, to see how effective it is to improvise and play as in comedies.
I'm curious, just to go back a little, what was the What was the move like going from the Australian entertainment industry to Hollywood? I just remember I was recently talking to Yvonne Strahovski about that. And, you know, it does, for her at least, it did feel like a bit of a leap.
Yeah. I think it was always clear to me that if I wanted to make this my career, that I would have to come to the States. I think that there are just more opportunities, especially for non-white people. And that's true. Ended up being true. So I think it was always just kind of my goal and my dream. So I think I do feel like I've had more experience in the States than in Australia. So I feel like if I had come off like doing a lot of work in Australia, maybe it would have been like, oh wow, this is such a different thing. But I kind of always was aiming towards this, so it felt right.
What did your family say when you decided you wanted to move to the US? Were they fully supportive of everything?
They were. I'm really fortunate because my parents are very supportive and also very like excited by this career and by this kind of world and industry. They really love film and writing and acting. Like they're just, they get a kick out of it. So so they were always supportive.
I love hearing that. I also love hearing when, like, you have a craft that you're passionate about and you get to share it with your loved ones. I feel like that's super important.
It's big, yeah.
So what was the time gap between moving to Hollywood and kind of having those aspirations and actually booking blockers? Was there any kind of period of, like, auditioning and not booking things, or did it kind of happen pretty quickly?
Oh, that was definitely that period. When I was 18 and I finished high school, I came to LA for 6 months and did acting classes and did like Actors Access auditions and was just like self-submitting. And it's kind of crazy to think that I did that. I did some really silly things. I feel like that was kind of I was just testing it out to see if that's what I wanted to do. And the visa was a big thing. I couldn't really work, so I was only able to do like unpaid things. I'm just thinking about this like unpaid movie that I did, but I hope that's how it is. And then I went back to Sydney because I didn't have the visa and was auditioning there, and was just auditioning a lot and not really getting anywhere. So that's kind of when I started doing stand up and I had a sketch group with some friends. And honestly, as soon as I started doing that and like independent theater and just things that were fulfilling me and made me feel good and made me feel like I was practicing and like working on what I want to do and my voice, and I was just like self-taping from Sydney, and so it was just kind of random that block is stuck.
So you submitted a self-tape for blockers.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. And what was it like when you heard back? I don't know whether it was you heard back because you landed the role or you made it to the next step of the process.
It was, oh my God, it was so crazy because also, I mean, I was like Seth Rogen. I was losing my mind. And Kate Cannon. But I remember I was at the Melbourne Comedy Festival. I had just landed and I had landed with my sketch group, Freudian Nip, and right before I got on the plane, I got a call from my agent being like, they want you to go to LA and meet Kate Cannon. I was like, and I had left my passport in Sydney, so I had to like get on the plane to Melbourne, fly straight back to Sydney, and then go to LA. So it was just such a a whirlwind, and I got cast like a week before we started shooting. It was
You left your passport?
Yeah.
Because you forgot it?
Because I was like traveling within Australia, and I guess I was feeling like excited because it was domestic. So I was like, I only need my driver's license. So I left it like a fool.
Okay.
And I'm never doing that again. I bring my passport everywhere I go now.
Probably a smart move there.
Yeah. So
you book Blockers, and you already mentioned being on set with John, Leslie, and Ike, but I am curious what it was like stepping on set for the first time, or even just jumping into like pre-production prep with Catherine and Gideon, because like Catherine had already had like a whole bunch of like serious credits to her name. And of course, Gideon is Pamela Adlon's daughter. So when you jump onto set with them, are there any kind of like nerves as far as building your own voice and career alongside them?
I think we were super lucky because we met and just sort of instantly got along. We didn't have a chemistry read or anything. So that we really just lucked out on that. But I guess, yeah, I did feel like a little bit of the wild card. I was like, I'm flying in from Australia, just like, here I am. But I think very quickly that kind of, those sort of nerves went away. Because they were just so warm and lovely.
Based on what I see on screen, I imagine that would happen. And it does seem like you have a knack for building that kind of chemistry with your co-cast, because you also see a very similar friendship, or not similar, but at least just like that electric vibe of it is similar in Broken Hearts Gallery, where like, again, you have another trio and their energy just kind of like radiates off screen.
Yeah, that's true. I guess we've been super lucky with that. I'm yet to have, you know, the opposite of that. I feel like all the things I've worked on, I've ended up becoming close friends with my co-stars, which is just the best outcome. Make friends.
I do love hearing that, but I do wonder, like, do you have any kind of like tools in your toolkit with, you know, if you're ever in a position where like the vibe on set just doesn't feel right, just to make sure you can deliver your best possible work, what do you do? What do you turn to?
I think, I don't know. I think like in terms of, I think you have to kind of just be thinking about the project as a whole. I think everything I've done, I've just loved it so much that I've wanted it to be the best that it possibly can be. So I think even if there is anything that's like, could get in the way of that, I think it's easy to just be like, we're going to make this work. So, and not that this is like ever badly happened, but I think it's just determination to make the thing good.
The attitude is paying off big time. So you get Blockers, and from my limited perspective as an outsider, I'm like, oh, like that was the game changer, that did it. For you though, was it the game changer, and did you find, you know, offers and opportunities coming your way after that?
To me, it did feel like the game changer. I think in every aspect, in my professional life, in my personal life, it was a big deal. It was the thing that brought me to the States and got me my visa, and it was really warmly received. And I have, that movie will just always have the most special place in my heart. So I do feel like I agree with that assessment.
So you hit it big with a comedy. And after that, you do incorporate some drama in your filmography. Were you ever in a position where after the success of Blockers, everything that you were getting was kind of like the same type of thing? Did you have to kind of like fight to find those other projects to add into the mix?
I do think there was an awareness of the kind of ensemble teen high school comedy that I wanted to sort of steer away from eventually. I mean, right after Blockers, I did The Package on Netflix, and which is also an ensemble comedy. But then I went straight on to Hala. And I do think that that was, I mean, it was because I loved the script, but I think also because, yeah, I wanted to try something different and kind of stretch myself in a new way. Yeah.
When we talked the other week, I was kicking myself because I had asked you if you had done heavy drama, like the moment at the end of Broken Hearts Gallery, and I had completely forgotten in the moment about Hala because I missed it at Sundance that year. So last night I watched it here, and I'm in lockdown with my entire family, and we watched the whole thing all together, and it was very nice.
Wow. Oh my God.
We got a lot of fans in the Nemiroff household right now.
Oh, that's so sweet.
So was there any key advice you got for, I guess, just jumping into a different genre and kind of dealing with different material in Hala, whether it was from Minhal or just anybody you had worked with before?
I kind of went into that being like, okay, how present and truthful can I be? I was kind of just like, it was such a gear switch from like the comedy energy and pacing. And I was really excited to do something that was sort of more subdued and quiet and observant. I was really excited to just like be an observer. I would watch interviews with actors and feel like always the takeaway was just be present and listen. And trust that it's coming across. So I feel like I just tried my best to do that.
It obviously makes me happy that you watch interviews with actors. Is there anyone that kind of stands out to you that kind of, I don't know, maybe made that kind of form of talking about acting click and you kind of just kept watching them?
I mean, yeah, I can't think of one specifically, but I love like Off Camera with Sam Jones and the Hollywood Reporter Roundtables, and I also in Sydney I had this place called the Actors Station, and they have an Instagram and they post little snippets of actors and interviews with some advice, and every time sometimes I'll just come across that and be like, oh, that was useful, that was nice to be reminded. I feel like it's all stuff that we know instinctually, but you just sometimes need to be reminded and just hear it.
Is there anything in those interviews that you wish was asked more often about other actors and their process that, I don't know, would be interesting or helpful to you?
I mean, I'm always very relieved when people are asked what their process is and they're like, I don't know. When it's like, you know, Meryl Streep being like, it's different every time. I'm like, thank God, because that's how I feel. I'm like, what? But I guess, yeah, maybe just like what's the first thing that they do when they get a script? Yeah, I feel like where to start, that's always kind of the hardest part.
So it's different for you on every single film, but do you have any constants where it's just like, I don't know, marking up your script, or I don't know, even just having like a specific drink on hand or any kind of routine element?
I mean, I'll read it over and over again, and sometimes I'll record it and listen to it and go for a walk. I find that like moving and changing scenery helps. I was doing that a lot with Miracle Workers, just recording the scenes and then listening to them. And then, you know, a cup of tea or something, or a seltzer.
Okay. No, that's like a healthy balance there. I feel like I would just be chugging coffee and Diet Coke on set all day. That is definitely my vice. So after doing Hala, like I know it's a completely different type of film, different type of material there, but did you find that experience helping you with your more comedic shows and films at all?
I think it was kind of a good exercise in like trust. I think trusting that you, when you feel it, that it comes across. I do think that maybe it's And so I think especially in drama made me feel like you can be subtle and the camera will pick it up. Not that I'm subtle in Broken Hearts Gallery at all. I was just thinking, I was like, I'm not subtle. But like, I think for drama, it was just nice to be like, you can do very little and, mm-hmm. and the camera sees it.
Well, the subtlety is there in Bad Education also. You definitely see it there.
Yeah.
I have to ask about working with Hugh Jackman and Allison Janney in that movie, especially because I feel like most of your scenes with them are almost like verbal slash reaction shot sparring in a way. So, you know, is there anything that, I don't know, maybe they did for you as a scene partner working on that movie that really helped you and your craft?
Both of them just were so like loose and fun. That's always what I pick up on, clearly, because I had the same impression on Blockers. But Hugh just like, he makes it seem so easy and fun. And he can just go, he's not someone who's like before the take, like in his head, like he'll just be chatting and then straight away go into the scene. And it's kind of amazing. And Allison too, I think she was so present and powerful, just had fun with it. Like in that scene where she's, when I'm talking about the pizza oven, and at the end she's like, go get yourself a slice. Like she just said that, she just improvised that. And I thought, and it was just so her character, and it was just, it was just cool to see how much fun they were having.
So it seems like their process probably aligned with how you like to work over the course of your career. Who would you say, I guess, challenged you the most with having like a completely different prep process that you had to adjust to?
I feel like Dacre Montgomery had quite a different process to me. I think he is very studious and, before we started, he had like made all, like he'd made tabs in his, it was in his script, and it was just very clear. And he said, he was like, I've studied this like a play, which was just so, it was just a completely different approach to me. And I think, you know, I think maybe like, maybe that was also coming from drama world into comedy world. Like, I would say he probably had the most varying approach in the people that I've worked with.
I also have one more Bad Education question for you, because I'm a Long Islander, and now I have to ask, did you spend much time in Roslyn?
I did. I don't.
Where did you go?
Mike Mikowski, who wrote the script and is from Roslyn and went to that school, we took a little road trip there together, and we went to this like little deli and got some lunch. I can't remember what it's called, but.
Is it featured in the movie?
It's not.
Kitchen Cabaret is, it's a pretty big deal around here.
Oh my gosh, it might've been that.
It could have been.
Are you there now?
Quite possibly. I might have been in that that school district bubble that they were always talking about with the warring district. So my high school might have been included in that.
Jericho, Syosset.
Maybe one of those. It's an interesting place to be.
It is. I loved it.
I am so excited to ask you about Miracle Workers, because I finally binged the show and it's so freaking good. Yay. That show is really, it exceeded all of my expectations, and I couldn't believe the switch from season one to season two and how well that plays.
When I got to Miracle Workers, I was so intimidated. It was such a beast as well. I mean, the sets that we had, it just felt like a huge production. And I think Dan and Steve and Simon and all of these people that I really admired, I definitely was like, really, really nervous.
did it even feel like a big production in season one? Because I saw some behind the scenes clips from Dark Ages and I could see the big builds that happened there. But I was wondering if season one was, you know, like more contained to sound stages.
We shot season one all in this fire optics warehouse, this huge warehouse. But we had built this massive, I mean, God's office was huge, and it was the sets that they built really felt so epic, and same with the prayers office, just the detail and the scope, like the walls of prayers that goes all the way up, like it was just, I mean, and Daniel even said, he was like, I haven't seen sets like this since Harry Potter, like this is kind of next level.
You guys are all so good in it together. Keeping the ensemble together, moving from season one to something so different with Dark Ages, like, did the ensemble sticking together make it feel like the same show to you? Or did it kind of feel like, I don't know, starting from the beginning in a sense?
We became so close. It does really feel like a company of actors and pals who just kind of have their kind of strengths and energies written to. And so for season two, we were all just so excited to get back together and to work with each other, because we all genuinely love working together and hanging out. So I think there was more of a kind of like comfortability and camaraderie. And then, yeah, and we all like read the new scripts at the same time. And it was just very, a little fam.
Do you know if there was any thought put into who you guys played in season one and then who you were cast as in season two? Was there any like specific choice to really shake things up for any one person?
Yeah, I think Simon really wanted to flip the kind of status of Dan and Steve, especially. I think like the highest possible status of God to the lowest possible status of shit shoveler. I think that really kind of like flipped it. I think for my character, it did feel like there was a sort of common thread. I felt like in both seasons, I was kind of the audience's way in, sort of a little bit ahead of her time and sort of reacting to the broken world around her.
That's a very accurate description there. So given that you guys were picked up for season three, yay, I'm very excited. Do you want to continue that thread in season three, or are you hoping that you get the opportunity to do something like completely different?
I am hoping to do something a little different this season. And I think from what I've heard, it will be a little like, I think, yeah, we're sort of mixing it up on many levels for this season. So I'm really excited to see what they come up with.
I am so incredibly pumped. You guys got me hooked, and then you hit that last episode, and then you get that like pang of pain, like I don't have any more to watch, and I get sad. Oh, but when cool. It's safe, go make more so I have more to watch.
Yep, we'll do.
So Broken Hearts Gallery, I was reading an Instagram post you did, and you said that Natalie changed your life forever, and I was hoping you could elaborate that on that a little more, because she is lovely, and I'm rooting for her.
Truly, I mean, me too. I think she really did. I think in a professional sense, giving me this opportunity to lead a romantic comedy, and she really gave me so much free rein and empowered me so much. It was beautiful. Like I couldn't, it just couldn't have been a better experience. She just made me feel like I was Lucy, and my opinion or feelings were as valid as hers. And it was just such a collaboration. And I think that that was just the most wonderful experience that I've had. And I kind of want to keep finding that in projects, that kind of collaboration and trust in a partnership. And she's just like the coolest, wisest, chicest, like 25 years old at heart, but is like a mother and has like accomplished so much. I think she's just amazing. And I am really in awe of her. And she's become one of my closest friends, and she always houses me when I'm in LA. And she's just kind of that person that, that I go to now for advice or to lean on. And I'm so just grateful. It just, the, yeah. And all the people I met on that, I feel like I just came away with so many great friends and really important relationships.
I really feel like you can feel that watching the movie, which is a big part of the reason why I love it so much. But speaking of that, I have to ask about working with Philippa and Molly, because that was hands down one of my favorite parts of that. I literally could just watch the three of you like chit-chatting in the apartment for hours and hours and hours. So when did that click for you? Was it similar to it clicking on Blockers also?
Yes, it was. I think I had known about both of them. Like I had sort of, Molly had actually tweeted at me like a year before when she saw Blockers, and I was such a fan of hers, and I saw Hamilton, but it wasn't with Pippa, but I knew that she was this like Broadway extraordinaire. And I was really, yeah, when I found out it was them, I was really pumped. And then as soon as we met, it was just like, oh yeah. And I think it almost felt like, I think where Blockers maybe felt more like high school, I think this really felt like we're in our mid-20s and we're like we're just meeting like-minded people, and they're just the best. They're like, you know, soul sisters.
I believe it. Does it take everything in you not to make her sing Hamilton songs?
I know. I would always be like, Eliza, around her. I think it was so annoying. But I definitely, we would always, on set, we were obsessed with Sweet But Psycho, which ended up making it into the movie because Natalie was like, what are you singing? Let's make you sing that in karaoke. But it's just always funny because we would just be joke singing, and she always just sounded incredible. I mean, Molly has an incredible voice too. So I just always was like, you guys can take care of that, because I'm just gonna not.
I'm a big fan of the karaoke scene, but also, like, this is gonna sound weird, but like the murder through line that runs throughout the movie with Molly's character, I feel like it's not easy to make something like that work and feel endearing, but she kind of does.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
So moving into some upcoming projects now, I know you have Rumble coming up, and that is your first time voicing an animated character in a feature film, at least. So would you say that your experience working on BoJack kind of gave you the prep you need to jump into that?
Yeah, I think so. And it's interesting because Will Arnett is in Rumble. Will and I had one recording session together, which was amazing because I'm a huge fan. I'm obsessed with Arrested Development, so I was losing my mind. And also he's just such a veteran now of voice acting. And I really, this was my kind of first time, and it really was such a learning experience because I think at first I was being very subtle and they kept having to be like, it's animation. You can like have fun. You don't have to like feel like, you don't feel it, but I think I was just sort of treating it like normal on screen acting when you can really, there's a lot more kind of freedom that you can have with just voice. So it was cool to see how he works, and yeah, I'm excited for that one.
Was there anything in the booth that required you to go real big? And I'm not even just talking about a line of dialogue, but all of like the other things that characters do that you don't think about a voice performer having to do as well. Like what, I don't know, made you feel the silliest or made you go the biggest?
Oh my God. I mean, the efforts, like, I think those, like, you know, anything that's like, you're on stable ground and being like, whoa, whoa, like that stuff always feels insane. And because in the movie, you know, Will Arnett is this giant monster and I'm this tiny girl, so there was a lot of me being like picked up and thrown around, and I think having to give voice to those those movements really felt insane in a good way.
It looks delightful. I can't wait to see that. Fandom is a very important thing in this industry, and it's part of the reason why I love it so much, because we have such strong communities around the properties we love dearly. Of everything you've done, like, where do you feel that the most? Is it a series like Miracle Workers that continues on, or is it something that really struck a special chord, like Blockers, anything at all?
That I felt the fandom?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess Miracle Workers a little bit. It definitely feels like the people, I feel like it's sort of not that many people have seen it, but the people who have really love it. And it's always really fun to meet those people. But yeah, I think Blockers, and honestly, The Package on Netflix, I think things are just so accessible everywhere. And it's such a cult comedy that I think that one has some fans that just like come out of the woodwork sometimes.
I've had conversations about that movie myself quite a bit over the last, what is it, like 2 years?
Yeah.
I feel like I'm in the ballpark there, but also because not enough people have seen Miracle Workers, you could watch season one on HBO Max right now.
Yes.
So watch it and then go buy season two because it's worth it. But now it's time for some random questions.
Okay.
What am I going to go with first? If you could only watch one movie over and over for the rest of your life, what would you pick and why?
I know what this is. This is Pop Star for me.
Oh, that makes me so happy.
I have already watched this several times and I just don't get sick of it. It's so funny. The songs never stop being funny. I love when song is involved. I think it's just genius. And I watch it over and over again. It makes me, when I'm down, I watch that movie.
Do you sing? Could there be a movie musical in your future?
Yes, please. I want that.
I love the sound of that.
With like the most heavy producing possible.
I'm sure it would be great. What is your favorite lockdown activity?
Favorite lockdown activity? I mean, God, I'm so boring. But I think just like ordering good food and watching something.
No, that makes sense. I have a feeling a lot of people out there can relate. Yeah. If you could only order in one thing for the rest of lockdown, what would you pick?
Either like Thai food or Chipotle. Another thing I don't get sick of. Something I could probably make at home, but I never will.
Do you cook?
A little bit, not very well. I've kind of been in like strange situations this whole quarantine where I haven't had to I feel like I've been with my boyfriend and he's a better cook than me. So I kind of just let him do it. But I have a few times. And many times it's been an actual disaster. I've set things on fire.
I still feel like you're a big step ahead of me. I'm the master of the microwave and pretty much nothing else.
Oh, that makes me feel better.
Do you have any pets?
I do. I mean, not with me myself, but my family, we have a lot of pets. We have a dog. We have a cat. We have several bunnies. We have a horse who is retired. His name is Mickey. He was born in 1988. So he's an old man. But for horses, just to be clear. don't want to make anyone feel bad for being born then. But those are our pets. We've just always been a zoo household.
I wouldn't want it any other way. I don't think I could ever live a day of my life without pets in it.
Do you have pets?
Oh, yeah. Well, Dewey just ditched me. He's been in my lap the entire interview until literally like 2 minutes ago. Yeah. But Deputy Dewey is looking on and he is approving of all of this. I have one more question for you, and it's like my more serious rapid fire question. What is the biggest fear you've had that you've managed to overcome?
Whew. I don't think I've overcome any of my fears. I've gotten better with one of them. I've always been very afraid of vomiting, of seeing it on screen, hearing it, myself doing it. I think blockers actually helped because it was sort of immersion therapy, that throw up scene. Because I think, you know, having to fake throwing up, it kind of ruined the illusion a little for me. And I was also on drugs in that scene, so I was able to kind of like disassociate. But I do think that that was sort of a immersion therapy. And now I'm better with it. I'm okay. Still not great, but better.
Sometimes we play a would you rather game, and one of my go-to questions for that is, would you rather have to fake sneeze or fake vomit in a scene?
Oh my God. Fake sneeze. I love sneezing.
Doing a convincing fake sneeze. When I really thought about it when I was writing the question, I'm like, all right, like, that's kind of hard.
It is hard. I'm like, should I do it?
I always leave the opportunity if someone wants to try. I mean, Oprah's done it, so I feel like if Oprah did it, you could do it.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Hey, did you miss that?
Hey.
That was good.
Come
that
on.
That was really good.
Ready? Oh my God.
I'm very impressed. Seriously, if that question wasn't the lead up, I would have believed you.
Thank you.
Job well done.
Wow. Just like, yeah, a little sharp. That was a specific type. I think if you wanted to go big, I think that's tough.
I would love to see a script where like the type of sneeze is specified. Really challenge everyone there. Geraldine, I can't thank you enough for spending so much time with us today. I want to like name everything. Blockers, Holla, the Broken Hearts Gallery, Miracle Workers, Bad Education. I think that those are the ones that we at least talked about. The Package on Netflix. Go watch it all. You guys will not be disappointed. Thank you again, and congratulations on everything.
Thank you so much. This was so fun.
Napa Know-How.
At Napa Auto Parts stores and Napa Auto Care centers, get a $25 prepaid Visa card when you get any Napa automotive battery. It's the best deal for some of the best batteries from some of the best car people around. But we might be a little partial. Anywho, pick up any Napa automotive battery and save $25. Do it yourself or have it done for you. That's Napa Know-How.
Napa Know-How.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores and Napa Auto Care centers. While supplies last, offer ends 8/31/20.
Stay little Chico Pitbull, Mr. 305, better said Mr. Worldwide, and I'm here to tell you about my new podcast, From Negative to Positive, brought to you by my friends over at State Farm. I believe that to have success, you got to play the game so that the game doesn't play you. You know, the biggest risk you take is not taking one. It's very important that you make sure that you make the most out of your money, especially when it comes to insurance. State Farm offers surprisingly great rates. They have great agents standing by helping you personalize your coverage. All this is backed up by award-winning, easy-to-use technology. It's a great price with an even greater service. When you want the real deal, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more.
and is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.